I listened and I heard what I needed and what I liked, and I love what he has to share. And when he leads meetings, it's always from the literature, and he really stays in the solution. And it was funny, I was asking him to tell his story this month, and I said, okay, 18th or 25th? He just said, it doesn't matter, you pick. I picked 18th, and he said, well, I'll remember that date. Why? Because it's my 26th birthday. So I'm so happy to have him here, to have Mr. Rusty Jones here on his 26th anniversary, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say. Where is he? He's hiding. There! It's so helpful.
I'm Rusty Jones, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And I want to start off, I am not up here to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm here to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. It didn't change. I did. I had to. It didn't. I couldn't change it. I can't change it today. I spent 26 years changing me to meet conditions, not changing conditions to meet my satisfaction. My attempts to change things to meet my satisfaction didn't work at all. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was barred from the Buckhead Mental Health Center for conduct unbecoming of the mentally ill. And in meetings, that is generally as far as I go into the details of what happened. I was seeing a psychiatrist, and he wanted me on. It was my therapist. He wanted me on a drug called. What's the name of that stuff? The stuff you take that makes you sick if you.
Anabuse.
Yeah, my therapist insisted I take Anabuse, and I had this laundry list of reasons. I couldn't use ketchup. I needed my aftershave. I had all these reasons, and she wasn't buying any of them. You know, so then there was some kind of conspiracy to get me to go to the VA for help, I think. And anyway, I wasn't about to do that because I knew they were going to lock me up. I was certified paranoid schizophrenic prognosis poor. Out of my drinking, prescription medication that I was abusing, ignorance of this disease, I was a very confused person when I came here. I was a blackout drinker, so I have to qualify, you know, to the best, you know, what you're about to hear is I have to qualify everything to the best of my knowledge, you know. So everything is qualified to the best of my knowledge because I was indeed a blackout drinker for 17 years. I drank for 14 years without any real consequences other than the most serious consequence of my drinking the first 14 years was an occasionally irate wife. Well, that didn't hardly get my attention. You just accept that. You know, that's part of the reality of the being married. You're going to be, the wife's going to be irate now and then, so no big deal there. Anyway, that went on for 14 years. I was raised here in Atlanta. Went to Northside High School back when Northside High School was college prep, and I did well enough as a track man pole vaulter to get a scholarship to Mississippi State, where I vaulted. And, you know, I was a Georgia State champion. I expected to be number one. And in high school, my drug of choice was competition. Literally competition. And I've talked to other alcoholics who would... Competition works like a drug for a lot of us. And you're number one and you're nothing. And there's a number of different ways that that mentality, the championship attitude, feeds this disease as I understand this disease. After college, I suppose I married the only young lady who didn't think I was insane for joining the Marine Corps. That was in 71. There was a war going on in Vietnam. And my solution was to join the Marine Corps, where I was quickly and thoroughly briefed on the occupational hazards of the Marine officer. There are only two: alcoholism and divorce. It's an attitude. Yeah. I was 10 feet tall. I was bulletproof. I learned a lot of valuable lessons. I learned some stuff that I will spend the rest of my life unlearning. I didn't realize until I came into these rooms that I was very insecure and needed the uniform to tell me who I was and what I was and where I fit in. And the Marine Corps did that for me, and it was an artificial crutch, an artificial way of treating the disease that qualifies me to address you people tonight. I am real grateful that I got sober in a hardcore, singleness of purpose environment. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on between my ears. I did not know anything about the traditions, and that was quickly brought to my attention that I needed to shut up and listen. I was taught the two rules for dummies. Don't drink, go to meetings. Take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. And I didn't share until I wasn't asked to share. I wasn't allowed to share until I convinced the right people that I understood the traditions well enough to share and was willing to stick with the purpose and the point of being here and not wander off, you know. And I'm still perfectly capable of getting out of sharing into teaching, and I'll try not to cross that line. I was warned about this podium, so if you know, any errors, I was warned. Anyway, I drank for 14 years. My first blackout was a freshman in college. I went to a fraternity party where I bought a bottle of Usher's Green Stripe Scotch. Not the highest quality, not the lowest quality. Some mediocre. And I remember buying the bottle of scotch, and the next thing I remember was waking up sitting in the gravel cold with about that much left in the bottle. I gave up scotch. I knew that was a problem between me and scotch. Learned that. My last blackout was, to the best of my recollection, February the 18th, 1982. I walked out of a bar called Aunt Charlie's. Some of you probably heard of that one. With beer in one hand, brandy in another. Beer was nothing but a chaser for the hard stuff. My daddy taught me well. Scotch to celebrate, brandy for medicinal purposes. My last 3 years, it was all medicinal purposes. That was very little scotch. But everything, I was, you know, had reached that point where I was totally addicted to alcohol, and being totally addicted to alcohol, I addicted to anything addictive the doctors tried to put me on. And no psychiatrist ever told me, Rusty, you're a drunk. I did see one drunk, and the good doctor told me, he asked me if I'd been drinking. I said, yeah, I had a couple of beers. I didn't bother to tell him they were both quarts. Now, that was just to take the edge off, you know. But the I was getting into the shakes, and I was prescribed a seizure medication by a psychiatrist. He asked me to hold out my hands, and I was about to shake his hand right now, or worse. And anyway, yeah, so he prescribed a seizure medication. I hadn't had a drink in about, I knew it from seeing the doctor drunk and being told I was wasting my money and his time to see when I'd been drinking. Well, it wasn't my money, it was my mother's, but, you know, point still being, it was, he was treating me for brain chemistry imbalance, and I'm drinking liquor, you know. So I had to, you know, one of the first things I had to learn in these rooms was I could not self-medicate and get any better. I had to learn to take medical advice and listen to the doctors about, you know, the MD behind my name. Some of you people had to, you know, help me learn to remove. Anyway, moving right along. I've never told this story before, so no, you know. Moving right along, I don't spend the whole time telling war stories about blackouts. And through college, through the Marine Corps, the blackouts got. I was a blackout drinker for 14 years. The last 3 years, I was pretty much a blackout drinker every night. I can't begin to tell you how many DUIs I should have gotten. I ended up with one DUI. So the Atlanta police back then weren't catching too many of us. And they still, you know, I got away with so much. And I came here feeling, you know, I do remember I was a captain in the Marine Corps Reserves, and I got into civilian. I was a charity psychiatric patient, and that just totally did weird numbers on my head. I didn't know what to think about me. And I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't understand it until I came in here that only the alcoholic black. Most people pass out before they black out. I wasn't passing out. I was blacking out before I passed out. I was experiencing the phenomenon of craving to the point I could not not drink. Until I came in here and was taught alcohol was not my problem, was my solution, nothing made sense. Until I was taught that I was more afraid of life than I was of death, nothing made sense. And I was later taught that Most of us have track records that prove we're a hell of a lot brighter than we are mature. So if, you know, and that, you know, that's pretty much the story, the mentality of the alcoholic of my time. You know? I came here and I was taught it's a we deal, it was a package deal, it was a God deal. And what Leslie read before I got up here was about how did I find this God of my understanding? I didn't. I don't pretend to understand God. My higher power is a concept. My God is an entity beyond my conception. That makes sense to some people and just doesn't register at all with others. I experienced this process up here that is so critical. I was one of those that had to be led through the process by somebody who had been led through the process, by somebody who had been led through the process. I had to find and learn to work with and be teachable by the alcoholic of my type. The condition I came to you people in, one, that was my solo best. Two, if I'd been teachable by anything other than the alcoholic of my type, I wouldn't have ended up in that condition to start off with. I had good teachers. I had good teachers in college. I had good teachers in the Marine Corps. I had good teachers in graduate school. I had good teachers. And in spite of all of that, I, Rusty Jones, who thought so well of myself, ended up at the mercy of Alcoholics Anonymous, who I was referred to by about 26 years ago. I made an emergency mental health phone call to Fulton County Emergency Mental Health. I was barred from the Buckhead Mental Health Center for conduct unbecoming of the mentally ill. I was not going to the VA. You know, you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them much. I was one of those. Anyway, some lady, I hope I never forget what she said. She said, call Narcotics Anonymous. I was talking about the drug of my drug of choice at the time was I was becoming severely addicted to a chemical called Ativan. It stopped working. It stopped working. And a bunch of old addicts had been around a long time told me, you crossed over. It'll never work again. And they babysat me and worked with me from February the 18th to February the 21st, which that, in 82, that would have been a Sunday morning. They sent me to a place called the Atlanta Biscayne Room. Where I literally spent the next 3 days coming off everything. Ativan, alcohol, Cogentin, Benadryl for insomnia. And I stopped taking everything. I didn't make it. I needed one of those chemicals. I was on 7. I needed one of them. We don't do that anymore. It's very dangerous. But it needed doing. And it worked out just the way it was supposed to for me. That was what I needed to do was, but I ended up, my sponsor called, knew he had to get me to some professional help. And I was balking at the VA. So I went down to, he took me down to the used to be a, years ago, there was a Fulton County detox down, this is going way back, I don't know if it's still there or not. And I saw a psychiatrist there who was willing to see me and check me out and prescribe something non-addictive. I'll never forget seeing that man. And I talked to him for about 20 minutes and briefed him on the overall situation. He reached down in his briefcase and came up with this little cartoon. There's a picture of a man with his head in a wood press, sitting like this. And the caption underneath it said, "Screw it down another notch, you son of a bitch. I'll work better under pressure." Right. Well, thank God for the strength sense of humor. You know, that was what I needed at the time. Because there were no solutions. Because I didn't know at the time that I already found the solutions. And that was fundamentally minded to me being teachable and staying teachable by my own kind. So I got back on medication and I got well. And I no longer needed the medication. My sponsor and I had this backup plan. Thank God for an old vet who understood the importance of having a backup plan, you know. Too few newcomers today have a backup plan. When all else fails, what are you going to do? Get to a meeting. Well, it was about 2:00 in the morning. I knew I had to get some professional help. So I left my mother's house in Buckhead. And the backup plan was me to go to the 8th floor Grady. Well, I ended up somewhere just north of Noonan. Noonan is not between Buckhead and Grady Hospital. So I obviously missed more than one turn. And the car just stopped. So I just pulled it over and started, okay. First car that came by just went right on by, and a couple of cars just went right on by. And about the third car that came by just stopped and asked me where I was going. I said, "I'm trying to get to Grady Hospital." He said, "Well, that's way back up the road. Those lights right up there, you could walk to the Noonan Hospital, but get in, I'll take you up there." So I get in and he asks me, and he's got a fifth of vodka on the console. And he's drunk. And some, by the grace of a God that I was just beginning to build a relationship with, he didn't really insist on it. If I wanted to drink, fine. If I wanted to go, let the doctor do something. Anyway, he got me to the doctor. They shot me up with Thorazine. My fiance, I was engaged when I came into the program. That's a whole nother story. Water seeking its own level or something. Anyway, I'm not here to tell anybody's story but mine tonight. That's something else that's hard to do sometimes, just to get up here and I gotta share without. I can't get into sharing, and I can't get out of sharing into teaching. I gotta stick with my story. I'm limited. Traditionally, And I have come to love and respect those traditions, so it's not a problem. It's just a little challenge. I got to watch this podium. It's squeaky. And I've been told things about this podium. Anyway, she comes and picks me up and get back to what was I going to do. I think finally, at some point, I finally said, okay, I'll go to the VA and see what they, you know. By this time, I had enough, you know. They weren't going to put me away permanent. I was convinced of that. So I, coming right up out of year, actually, I didn't go to the VA. It's fast forward for, I don't remember going to the VA that first year. Right up to the end of that first year. That's a whole other story, though. Anyway, I was somewhere between 6 and 9 months. And I really wanted to get, I'll just say this to keep it from out of the war story category. I came off my medication a number of times. I always ended up at the mercy of the doctors. And I'd much rather be at the mercy of Alcoholics Anonymous than at the mercy of the VA hospital. So I learned to listen to the doctors enough that I can function in this environment. And I'm actually getting here lately where I can function out there. In the corporate arena, I refuse to call it the real world. I still refuse to call it the real world. The corporate arena, I've had my struggles with it, and that's a whole other story. Anyway, where was I? Back to my first sponsor. Taught me two things. Being an old Navy man, it absolutely had to have a backup plan, and the backup plan was if I couldn't keep it together, I had to go to the doctors. I had to go to the doctors, and I finally, somewhere between 15 and 20 years sober, I finally understood the medication. So, anyway, I'm still on medication. I'm on a newer medication. I'm only on one medication, and I'll take a chemical called Abilify for a debatable, and I don't debate diagnostic labels, and this is really the wrong place to get into. The saving grace of the label alcoholic is that it gives us a sense of unity. The other labels, I don't particularly care for. I'm currently classified with the civilians. Doctors consider me, I'm dealing with a combination of alcoholism and post-traumatic stress disorder, which can produce schizophrenic symptoms. That's what my current doctor and I believe. Fortunately, the medication is right either way, so the VA ain't going there. I'm non-combat. No combat experience. I was a communications officer in El Toro during Vietnam. I never went to Vietnam. I am not an amphib. I have no issues to go back to the Marine Corps. I've got paperwork from the VA to prove it. Yeah. So that's a whole other story. A lot of us have paperwork from the VA to prove we don't have issues related. Anyway, I've got a sober job, driving a taxi for a drunk named Jocko. And I got sober driving a taxi when I was unemployable. A member of this fellowship gave me a job. And that worked for me only because he gave me every break in the world, and one of the dispatchers was in the program, and it just worked. It worked beautifully. It worked miraculously. It gave me a sense of I was something. I was no longer associated with the Marine Corps, but my self-image was still Marine. I was raised by a Marine. To be a Marine, I became a Marine. And my adjustment to civilian life has been less than ideal. The corporate arena is not the real world. Anyway, I did that for about 6 years. And it was working. And I kept doing it because it was working. And it, I started getting burned out on that, and I went to the labor pools. But before I left that, there's one story I want to tell. I was on a taxi stand, and I was really feeling like why I couldn't get it together. I was really concerned about my progress. I didn't feel like I was making the progress I saw some of my peers making. So that was very frustrating, isn't it? But, you know, I'm sitting on a taxi stand, and another alcoholic with a lot of time, a guy named Shaky Sam, came up on the same taxi stand. And I talked to him, and I said, "What are we doing wrong? Why aren't we getting it together?" And I better never forget what he told me. He said, "Rusty, I'm at peace with my priorities. I'm sorry you're not." Yeah. And today, I'm at peace with my priorities, and I have the serenity I do because I'm at peace. You know, there's no, I spent 30 years out there. I chased down successfully all the symbols of success, and I still needed to drink, so something was wrong. And I say all the symbols of success. On the inside, I was one miserable man. And today, by the grace of God and what you people have taught me, I know the difference between the symbols of success and success. And happiness is an inside job. And that was fundamentally, and thank God I was taught this was an inside job. And, you know, I've had, Roland, the name on that board up there, was an interesting individual. Now, I know a lot of you don't remember Roland, but Roland could be difficult to deal with. And I could be difficult to deal with. And over at Biscayne, Maggie could be difficult to deal with. The principles before personalities, I was one of those personalities that other people had problems putting principles before. And I spent 26 years cleaning it up and toning it down and putting, keeping it civilized. I still have my shortcomings along those lines, but yeah. I say all that to, you know, this hasn't been an overnight matter for me. And I haven't readjusted to civilian life as well as I maybe could have if I had done things a little different. But the bottom line is I'm very happy with my life today. I'm very happy with the people in my life. I've got I don't have any enemies that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm sure I've irritated my share of people. But I'm grateful for I know I said this before, but I'm grateful that I got sober in the singleness of purpose environment, and we kept the outside issues in the parking lot where they belonged. And it seemed to work better for everybody, especially the dual disorder people. And I'm not here to address that, but a part of me, I think, needs to. We didn't use the term dual disorders 25 years ago. It wasn't in existence. There are those, too, who suffer from grave mental and emotional, meaning do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And getting honest isn't easy. I have a disease of rationalization and justification still today. And I need you people who sponsored me, who've befriended me, who loved me until I could learn to love myself. I know that, you know, there's still a self-destructive part of me. But, you know, it's taken, there's a site at Biscayne that, you know, the AA program will, and I don't remember exactly the total, it'll never be yours never be completely yours until you've given it away. And that's so true. So this program will be more mine tomorrow than it was this morning, if I've given away anything tonight. Because that's what it's all about. It is the past that I'll deal. And the life I have today is beautiful. But, you know, that taxi stand where I quit comparing my insides with other people's outsides and started making peace with my priorities and putting sobriety number one, always, under all conditions. And there's people in these rooms tonight, people sitting here tonight, that a number of you people I just would not have made it without. Others I'm looking forward to getting to know better. The key to this program is in those steps and experiencing that process. It starts out with the word we. And you know, I came down here a little over 6 months ago now, and I started reconstructing that we down here. And I've gotten to know a lot of really beautiful people, and I've seen some people from my past. And the reunion has just been really a wonderful experience. And getting to know a lot of beautiful young people with tremendous potential to do, you know, so much more than, you know, I was 36 when I got here. I was 36. So if you're in this room tonight, and a number of you are, and you're young enough, you got a head start on this deal. Anybody under 36 and sober's got a head start. You're ahead of me. If you look at it, if you put it in that perspective, it is a disease of perception. And you know, without you guys, I'll drink again. I really will. I'll self-destruct. Without you, there's no hope for me. But I can't, you know, say enough about the importance of the we and getting connected. I came here pretty much totally dependent on my mother, my brother, my fiance, and my psychiatrist. And they were all sick, dependent relationships because there wasn't anybody else involved. There wasn't enough people involved to keep me from being overly dependent, you know. And one of the critical things I still have to learn is to depend on the group. If you're a basket case, is what we used to call it, and you want to get this deal, you can. Just spread your neediness so thin nobody really feels. I still have to do that. But if I spread my neediness so thin nobody really feels it, you know, I did more harm than good when I was drunk. And that's what had to reverse. You know, the literature talks about a contented, useful sobriety. I have a contented sobriety because I'm at peace with my priorities, not because I have collected great material wealth. I haven't done that. I have a wealth of beautiful people in my life, and I look out here at this room tonight, and it's an honor just to be here in this room, and not just to be up here behind the podium, but an honor to be here and be able to tell you what has worked so well for me. The we of the first word of the first step, the singleness of purpose. And I hope I haven't gotten too far into the other stuff. But the other stuff has played such a critical role in my life and my recovery. And I see Tim reaching for the baskets. So that tells me it's time for me to shut up. Thank you. Thank all of you for coming. Thank you, Leslie, for asking.
Thank you, Rusty. I really enjoyed that. And with the seventh tradition,